Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It is Monday, July 9th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speeds, the Spitting Statistician. And as always, I am overjoyed to be joined by FSWA Hall of Famer, El Rey de Fantasía, the King, Scotty Angle. How you doing, Scotty, man? How was your weekend?
I am doing very good. It's very interesting about the El Rey de Fantasía thing that you always talk about. You know, we'll hear our interview with Sergio Romo from Tampa Bay Rays talking fantasy football today. And yeah, you know, two of my friends in the media were with me around near Romo's locker, and they said this guy, his nickname is the King. And Sergio Romo said, "Oh, El Rey." I said, my caller called me El Rey de Fantasía. Sergio Romo thought that was really cool.
There you go. What we got to do next time, though, when you're in the locker rooms, and we'll definitely hear from Sergio Romo. I'm excited to hear what he had to say. You got to get them saying it, Scott. You got to be like, you know, "Hi, I'm Sergio Romo, and you're listening to El Rey de Fantasía on El Fantasy Sports Radio Network," for a little drop, you know, something like that. But that sounds good. That sounds good. You had a good weekend, though, Scotty?
Yeah, I had a good weekend. Watched a crazy race at Daytona on Saturday night. There was a whole bunch of wrecks, two overtimes. I know Kenny was watching a 22 car wreck. Hardly anybody was left towards the end, and then you did a little shopping this weekend.
Got you. How does that work in, like, say, fantasy? You know, I know you have the Crown Prince of NASCAR there talking to DFS there. When, like, less than half the field even, like, finishes the race, how do you wind up getting fantasy points that way?
It's very hard. It's when you have restrictor play rates like Daytona and Talladega, you never know what's going to happen. Those races are so unpredictable because of the crashes. It's more luck than anything.
All right, absolutely. So, I mean, hopefully that everybody was listening to Sean Angle, a little NASCAR, helping him out, restrict to play races. I hope everybody wound up okay. Scotty, let's turn our attention to football because, listen, I'm telling you, I think excitement is building. You're starting to hear, like, more and more conversation about it. My like, biggest home league went live on its format kind of over the weekend. My commissioner sent out a spreadsheet with all the keeper values going into, this year with, the escalator cost and stuff. So everyone's starting to get a little bit excited. I'm emailing people with some trades. So you need to really get caught up on fantasy football. I'm going to tell you something. The best way to do that is right here, Roto Experts in the Morning from 7 to 9 a.m. We will be holding you down. You can call the number. It is 844-843-6879. It'll be more than just Kenny and Philly getting their advice, getting their insight from Scotty and Dane. The other thing is, guys, this Roto Experts exclusive Edge fantasy football draft package is live. I'm talking about the King's rankings. I'm talking about the all-in kid Jake Seeley's rankings, who, by the way, was just rated literally the best fantasy ranker in the business. Literally, okay? So you're going to get that. You're going to get all sorts of great articles. You're going to get yourself the generator. You put your kind of format in, and it'll give you customized tiers. It is really the best place to get ready for fantasy football this year so you can win your leagues and win that cash. And we'll be talking about it Monday through Friday from 7 to 9. Scott, one of the things that I saw over the weekend, a couple of news and notes I want to bounce off you. One is this idea about Le'Veon Bell, right, and holding out, that he's probably going to hold out for the preseason. Listen, we have seen this before with Le'Veon Bell, Scott. He's missed some time. We've seen him even miss the first couple of games of the season due to suspension. My question for you is this, Scotty. If you're a Le'Veon Bell owner, like I am, okay, in my dynasty leagues, the issue I've had before with him holding out is that I worry about, like, weeks one and two of the season, you know, like that he gets off to a slow start. And that did happen a couple of years ago. Do you have any feel? Like, what do you think is the value of training camp for a veteran like Lev Bell? I hear in baseball that these guys, you know, hate it halfway through spring training. How important is training camp? How important is the preseason for a guy like Le'Veon Bell? Or even if he does hold out, do you expect him to hit the ground running, included, and meant in the early part of the season? Would that give you any concern?
It really depends on the player. And, you know, Le'Veon Bell is simply the best all-around running back in fantasy football. Not every game is going to be spectacular for every player, though, whether it's the first, fourth, seventh, or what. So as long as he's there close to opening week, I'm really not concerned about it. If somebody wants to drop him down the board to me, it's number two or number three, welcome it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you're still drafting him, you know, in the top three. I'm just wondering, like, generally speaking, does this matter to you that he's missing the time and we'll have to ramp up?
It doesn't.
Absolutely, it doesn't. Absolutely. Let me ask you another question, Scotty. This is a another piece of news I saw over the weekend. I saw idea of these trade talks of Earl Thomas to the Dallas Cowboys are still kind of on the table, are still live. You know, when we had the Cam Chancellor news last week, we talked about kind of like the championship window of the Seahawks. We talked about kind of the end of the Legion of Boom as we knew it in that secondary with no Cam, with Richard Sherman in somewhere else in the division. We're still hearing this news that this Earl Thomas to Dallas is still possible. Let me ask you this, Scotty. What percent chance do you give that Earl Thomas is a member of the Seahawks come opening weekend? Is it greater or less than 50% in your opinion?
I would say greater than 50%. I'm going to put it about 70% right now. But, you know, as somebody from UPI put it this weekend, that, you know, that we're basically – we're not any – a guy is not going to leave $10 million for this year on the table and not play, you know, and get penalized, et cetera. It's going to be a stare down during training camp. You know, we've read all the stories about how big of a Dallas Cowboys fan Earl Thomas is. Cliff Averill in a radio interview last week was saying that, you know, he used to leave the locker room earlier than everybody else to watch the Cowboys when they were playing night games. And, you know, this guy's from Texas, went to college in Texas, still a big Cowboy fan. Everybody knows the story about him chasing down Jason Garrett. Right. So that would be likely where he wants to go. But the Seahawks still want to be a playoff contender this year. And if they lose Earl Thomas after losing Chancellor and Sherman, it's too big of a hit to their secondary, at least for this year, while they get some of the other younger guys up to speed.
Okay, so you think that because of that, that he's going to stay? You think that that means – are you saying that because he's so needed that when you're in this stare-down, you mentioned that he's in a stare-down with the Seahawks, does that mean that you think the Seahawks are the ones to blink first?
I would say that they're not going to give him what he wants. You know, they have the power to trade him, and then it's just not going to give him what he wants because they need him this year. So, you know, that's
so they're going to call his bluff. And you're thinking, ultimately, he won't leave that money on the table, and he'll come tail between his legs eventually.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, this is what you want to see from a Seahawks fantasy defense perspective. Because if they have Earl Thomas out there, and they have Wagner, and they have KJ Wright, and they have Frank Clark, et cetera, this can still be a respectable fantasy defense, not dominant like it used to be. That would be a big difference for the Cowboys, though, because I believe, you know, that their secondary is still their one weak point. You know, it's in transition still from 2 years ago, but having Earl Thomas there would be a significant upgrade to a defense that's already very good up front.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be valuable. I mean, Earl Thomas would be a value to any team, right? But especially, you know, Dallas, who has some issues in the back end. I agree with you, Scott, when it comes to the Seahawks. Remember, I was saying this last week. I think the people are throwing dirt on the grave of the Seattle Seahawks a little bit too soon. I do think their defense will regress, but there's a lot of room for you to regress from, like, truly elite to still, like, good. You know what I mean? They could be go from top three kind of defense to, like, even if you finish something like eighth or ninth, you're still a good defense, but it may not be that incredible force that can carry you like they once were in Seattle.
Yeah, I got them ranked 13th in my ranks on rotoexperts.com right now in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter the King at checkout for a special discount. But I think they're going to be a good enough streamer depending on who the opponent is. Like, you look at the opponents winning the division, I don't want to play them against the Rams, but I'll consider them against the Cardinals.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, I know, Scotty, the schedule isn't a huge deal to you, but sometimes, obviously, the home road splits are. And as we know, the Seahawks and their defense are a much better squad when they are at home in front of the 12s. Scotty, one other piece of news.
It depends. Like you say, like, schedule doesn't matter. I wouldn't say that, you know, all, you know, that not across the board. What I'm saying is when you're making evaluations for this season, okay, you can't just look back at last season. You have to know the changes, and you have to project ahead. I think too many people bet through schedule now is based on last year. As for saying that they're much better on at home than they are on the road, you know, that might be the case now, but, you know, when they were a dominant defense, you know, they were a dominant defense because they traveled.
No, absolutely. We're saying the same thing, Scotty. You know, when you say that they've taken a step back, you know what I mean? When you said they were 13th, I was just more general saying from elite to, like, good or above average. You know, like, what I'm saying is they go to a spot there where you may have to consider the matchup, consider home road a little bit more. And we always know that they are strong at home. So if you're in that position where you're more like maybe streaming them, you got to think that that's when to stream them. That's all I'm saying Scotty.
It's past the point where you say, okay, if you're at home, you know, it also includes the opponent because the Rams rang up 42 points on them in Seattle late last year.
Well, like I said, you have to think. There's more considerations. It's not like just like a blind thing out there. Scotty, one other piece of news that I wanted to get your take on, you know, and this is kind of one of those random beat reporters with some buzz. Everybody looks great. Everybody's in the best shape of their lives, that sort of thing. But down in Arizona, we got the beat writers predicting a quote-unquote breakout season for Ricky Seals-Jones. I know a lot of people are talking about this, right? I think he's going to take a step forward. I've always said that I like the second-year tight end to take that jump, you know, because they've starting to learn a little bit more the blocking schemes and the routes. And when you look at Arizona, I mean, I think it's very, very viable for him to be the third option in the passing game behind, obviously, Larry Fitzgerald and the returning David Johnson, who will, you know, kind of be a big boon in the offense. But I agree that Ricky Seals-Jones could, in fact, have a little bit of a breakout, all factors considered. Scotty, my question for you, and I was talking with this about Jake Seeley a little bit last week. We talk, as you know, we talk about the general theory about, like, waiting on quarterback because that after the elite ones, like that, what I'll call that, like, you know, that whatever tier it is, the second or the third tier, that's so big that I kind of call the Baskin Robbins tier, right? Like, it's different flavors for whatever you kind of like. You know, we've talked about some of the quarterbacks that will be there. Now, take that idea to tight end, Scotty. I kind of feel similarly. You know, you have the elite ones. You know, you have your Gronk, your Kelce, your Ertz. You have some of the guys in that next tier, depending on who you believe is there. Maybe a Graham, a Rudolph, an Ingram, an Olsen, whoever that is, right? But once you get to around tight end, roughly, let's say, 8, right? All the way down to, I don't know, roughly tight end, like 14 or 15, right? It's kind of the same thing. It's kind of that Baskin-Robbins tier where it's different flavors for what you like. Do you like the dependable older guy? Do you like the ascending guy? And I think Ricky Seals-Jones could be in that tier. My question for you, Scotty, is do you agree with that outlook generally on the tight end position? And if so, how big is that tier? Who are some of those other tight ends that, like, you can let come to you? You know, I think about a guy like, say, Trey Burton and others that might be in there. Do you agree? And, like, how big is that group that you can kind of allow it to wait and come to you, these kind of potential breakout tight ends?
First off, about Seals Jones, I think this beat reporter is behind a lot of us fantasy guys like you and me who have already said how much we'd like Ricky Seals Jones. I could not believe that in our FNTSY mock last week that he was still sitting there in the 14th round. I had Evan Engram, but I said in the 14th round, I can't leave Ricky Seals Jones on the board. You know, to me, this guy is a top eight tight end. Now, waiting on tight end, look, I don't jump for Gronk or Kelce. Maybe I might move for Ertz.
Okay.
You know, when guys are I'm not taking a tight end in the fourth round. You know, I'd like to get maybe like an Evan Engram in the seventh like I did in our draft. You know, then you got Delanie Walker, Kyle Rudolph. I got Seals Jones ninth, Jack Doyle 10th. And anybody outside of the top 10, I would say, I would not want as my starter. To me, there are only top 10 tight ends that I feel comfortable with as my starter. Trey Burton's all about upside, but we haven't seen it yet. He's 11. Jordan Reed is 12th because he can't stay healthy. Then you have that group you're talking about. George Kittle, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, Austin Seferian-Jenkins, David Njoku. To me, 13 through 17 is one tier. Yeah, and then you got Tyler Eifert, Vance McDonald, that's, you know, if I'm getting anything out of 19, I'm very, very uncomfortable.
Sure.
So, but I really don't want George Kittle or O.J. Howard as my starters because I feel like they have too much to prove. Give me a guy who's done it already, who's in that top 10.
Got you. So you're putting that tier as something around like right after Ricky Seals-Jones, right? Like I'm talking about maybe say like the Doyle to the Kittle or Howard kind of Brate even kind of range.
You know, Doyle's not even in that range for me with the Kittles and the Howards.
Okay, but let me ask you real quick about Doyle. Okay, kind of separately. Remember the Indianapolis Colts did also bring in Eric Ebron this year, you know, and I know that the Colts for years have been trying to go at these two tight ends, ever all the way back since it was like Fleener and Dwayne Allen, right? Then they try to have guys like Swope in there, you know, and they've been trying to go to this dual tight end for a while, but I haven't seen really an offense that's been able to support multiple tight ends. I don't know, maybe since the Patriots back when they had Hernandez and Gronk, and that was kind of a special case. I guess my question is, if you have almost, and I don't know if this is the right term, Scotty, but if you have like a tight end timeshare, for lack of a better term, there's two tight ends out there, doesn't that kind of hurt the value of a guy like Jack Doyle, the fact that Ebron will also be there taking some of the opportunity?
No. What has Eric Ebron done to make us think this so far? Eric Ebron has been nothing but noise. He has proved absolutely nothing in this league, and a lot of NFL teams will have a second tight end that they employ. They will run two tight end sets, but one tight end is clearly the pass catcher. Why would you cut into a guy who caught 80 balls last year for 690 yards and four touchdowns, and he did that without Andrew Luck? So to me, Jack Doyle is not threatened by Eric Ebron whatsoever.
Okay, I mean,
if anything, what they do out is they carve out more of a role in the passing game for Ebron inside the 10, but that doesn't affect Doyle. Doyle's still going to get his. Doyle was never really a red zone guy anyway. He's only caught nine touchdown passes the last 2 years. So, you know, maybe that hurts the wide receivers more than anything, but you're talking about a second tight end option here. They're not draftable. They don't hurt the starter that much. Yeah, I really don't see it happening.
You don't see it happening. Okay, fair enough. I mean, the one reason I would say where I do see it gives me cause for pause is I always like to follow the money, you know, and anytime a team goes out and spends money for someone, it makes me think that they have them as a real part of their plans.
How much money did they spend on Eric Ebron?
I'll have to go and check that, but I do know they signed him in free agency. So, I mean, they targeted him.
It doesn't mean he's going to overtake Jack Doyle.
I'm not saying he's going to overtake Jack Doyle. I'm saying the presence of a second one could eat potentially into some of the opportunity that is there, you know, sacrificing some for of Jack Doyle. But we'll see. I'll look that up over the
four years, $12.2 million. That's about $3 million a year. That's not too much.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I mean, I'm just saying if they targeted him on some level. So we'll see. We'll see,
yeah,
though, as
they,
it goes on.
Look, to run a two tight end set, you put more pressure on the defense. But to me, clearly Jack Doyle is more of the number one.
Yeah, I'm not talking about who's the one or the two. What I'm saying is just the presence of the two. It just, you know, like we talk about with running backs, Scott, how there's a difference between being a workhorse back and being part of a timeshare. You know what I mean? Like, all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're not going to explain it to me. I know
what you mean. Okay, fair enough. There's some compromise there, but we will see. That is why.
I don't think there's much. I think, look, they work him into the offense, but not the expense of Jack Doyle. You know, this is a guy that hasn't, you know, he caught 61 balls 2 years ago, and he caught 5 touchdowns once, but, you know, he's only got, you know, he's been a big disappointment. He's only got a dozen, you know, touchdown catches in 4 years. And, you know, he had a year with, he's been a big disappointment. 2 of the last 3 years, he hasn't hit 600 yards.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, hey, if you think that Ebron is no threat to Jack Doyle, then that's why we will see. That's why we will see. Remember, go on, get the King's rankings over on the Exclusive
Edge. He's ranked number 30 for me.
You have Jack Doyle ranked as number 10 in your tight end rankings. All I'm saying is Speed's a spitting statistician, who is, by the way, not the King, okay? So, you got to listen to the King. I'm just saying.
If Eric Ebron has a good year and Jack Doyle's numbers get trimmed, I will say that right. You're right and I'm wrong. And you're here for your fantasy acumen just as much as anybody.
Fair enough. And just to make it be so I'm clear, it is not that I think Ebron will surpass Doyle. It is, however, what I'm saying is that if I'm on my draft board and I'm at this level where there's Jack Doyle and some other tight ends at this level available, I might choose the other tight end that doesn't have a familiar name also in the same position room, also potentially eating in. I'd rather the quote-unquote workhorse than
Eric
the
Ebron is not is a familiar name for all the wrong reasons, though.
All right. Well, we shall see. We'll have to find out when we go ahead and actually play these games, which will, to be quite honest, and that's something we're excited about, these games will start getting played in a couple of months, and then we don't have to speculate. We don't have to extrapolate out. We'll be telling you about what happened and why you should continue to listen to Roto Experts in the morning and continue to get all the great insight from the Roto Exclusive Edge Fantasy Package. For example, Scott,
enter the King at checkout for a discount.
That's all right. Let's get the King for a discount. Do you control those promo codes, Scotty? Can I get one that's like, can I tell people like on Fantasy Freestyle to enter Speeds for a discount, something like that?
Sure, we could talk about that after the
all
show.
Right, we'll have to make that happen somehow. So listen, if you go ahead and you do, whether you enter the promo code King, whether you enter any other promo code, I think radio is a promo code you could use as well.
On this show, we use the King.
Okay, we
for
use
the first
King.
Hour.
And it's funny because Jake is very, very specific also about using his promo code for the second hour. I think it's whether it's All In or whatever the case may be.
All in Kid.
I'm sure we'll hear that one in hour number two of Roto Experts
Look,
in the morning.
As long as we sell it, that's fine. But, you know, on this hour, we can use the King.
Fair enough. Enter the promo code King, K-I-N-G.
The King.
The King, THE KING. What about Scotty if they use El Rey? We got to make that one work also, the Spanish version. But I digress. Listen, Scotty, in this package, one of the things they will see is a great article by Bobby McMahon, this idea of post-hype sleepers, okay? And I think this is very, very important because, you know, sometimes, you know, you hear about someone, right? And then when they crap out for you early in their career, everyone has their kind of, like, battle scars, you know? Every fantasy owner can name the players that they, like, always took a chance on or always rode with and that they never delivered for them. You know, these are the stories you tell at happy hour. It's like, oh, I had this guy and he got hurt, or oh, I had this guy and he completely busted for me, right? And then sometimes people just throw them away and forget about the fact that, like, maybe in year three, maybe in year four of their career, they start to figure it out and they start to realize the value that they once had. Scotty, first, you know, before we get into some of the guys that Bobby McMahon kind of targets that fit this description, similar to how we were doing zero running back or zero wide receiver theory, can you help define for us what do you see? What is a post-hype sleeper? Did I pretty much get it right? Someone who doesn't fulfill early on, but that still could then represent value because of their kind of narrative or their their legacy, let's say, and that that might not be accurate moving further into their career. How would you define a post-hype sleeper, Scotty?
A guy who pretty much got a lot of buzz at one point early in his career and then turned out to be a flop. But, you know, now when people are have moved them well down their draft boards, they rebound to maybe reach that potential that people had, had targeted them for them originally.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, right? So when you talk about that, then later on in life, and cause, and the term is like a sleeper because people are sleeping on them. You know, people are sleeping on them because maybe, like you said, they had a lot of buzz and didn't realize that at first. So you're like, oh, snap, this guy isn't going to do anything. And that's why you're sleeping on them, okay? So when we come back here on Roto Experts in the Morning, we're going to do a couple of things, okay? First, we are going to talk fantasy football with baseball players, okay? The King spent a couple of minutes with Sergio Romo, closer, opener, pitcher extraordinaire for the Tampa Bay Rays. We're going to hear about some of his outlook on fantasy baseball. We'll talk a little bit about our big-time takeaways, our top-level takeaways from the All-Star Game nods. We'll get you ready in fantasy baseball in terms of injuries that happened over the weekend, and then we will dive into this article from Bobby McMahon in terms of who are the biggest post-hype sleepers heading into your draft in fantasy football this year, 2018, getting ready to win your league and win that cash. It is El Rey de Fantasía, Scott Engel, the spitting statistician, Dane Martinez. We are getting you ready, okay? And then also, don't forget, if you're still into fantasy baseball, if you're still playing DFS, go on over to, you know, dailyroto.com/DKMS. You'll hear about how you could help the fight against blood cancer. You will also get all the insight you need to win a little bit of extra cash. As people's attention turn to football, you can still win cash on baseball. We'll be right back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning. Dane and Scott on a Monday. Let's go.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Say New York City, yeah. All across the country, though, it is Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King, Scott Engel, FSWA Hall of Famer, breaking it down. We were talking about, you know, some of these, you know, sleeper, maybe breakout tight ends like a Ricky Seals-Jones and how many other options you have there if you let the draft come to you at tight end. But we also want to give you some news and notes real quick about baseball. Listen, all right, the All-Star Game rosters came out. In my opinion, Scotty, Blake Snell has to be the biggest snub so far. I mean, he leads the AL with a 2.09 ERA. He's 12-4. Guy has 132 strikeouts and 116 innings. His batting average against him is a paltry 183, yet he was left off the roster, not even part of the fan vote. But as you know also, Scotty, I mean, with so many injuries and people that wind up like pitching on Sunday and Ben being ineligible, I'm sure Blake Snell will still wind up on the AL roster representing the Rays.
Yeah, and Justin Verlander is going to be inactive, so there's a spot from right there. Yasiel Puig headed to the DL with a strained right oblique. Chris Bryant's going to begin a rehab assignment today. D. Gordon back in the lineup last night, single, double. Trevor Story came back in that same game with a two-run home run. Ryan Braun going on the 10 DL with a back injury for the second time this season. That's very concerning. Lorenzo Cain was activated. Sean Doolittle, strained toe. He's day-to-day. Aaron Hicks missed yesterday's game with a hamstring injury. Nick Castellanos missing Sunday's game with wrist soreness. Tommy Pham removed from Sunday's game with an ankle injury. Avisail Garcia left Sunday's game with right hamstring tightness. And he was already on the DL with a hamstring problem earlier this year. Malik Smith leaving Sunday's game against the Mets with leg cramps. Yeah. Gorkys Hernandez leaving Sunday's game against St. Louis with a leg injury. Paulo Sandoval sprained left thumb in that game. Yadier Molina missed two straight games with a shoulder injury. The GM of the Brewers, David Stern, says Jimmy Nelson is unlikely to be available before September. And in good news, Will Myers in a 16-inning game Sunday with the Diamondbacks got his first hit in the 16th inning. It was his walk-off homer. He has 4 home runs in 2 days.
Yeah, Will Myers starting to get hot. That's good to see there. You mentioned Sean Doolittle getting banged up. Good thing that the Nationals were proactive. Remember, they already traded for Kelvin Herrera from the Royals. We may see some other relievers on the move in the next couple of weeks. You know, Brad Hand. We got, the idea of Zach Britton potentially. And don't forget about Iglesias
Jerry's familiar.
Down there. Familiar. Don't forget about Iglesias in Cincinnati as well. We'll keep our eye out for that. George Kurtz always with the closer articles over there on Roto Experts. Give that a try as well. Scotty, we mentioned that you spent a couple of minutes with Sergio Romo, the starter, the closer, the opener for the Tampa Bay Rays. What'd you talk to Sergio about?
Fantasy football. Sergio's a big fantasy football player for a very long time. Commissioner of the Tampa Bay Rays League and a former champion of the San Francisco Giants Clubhouse League.
Interesting. Another Ray and Giant who I know plays a lot of fantasy is Evan Longoria as well. But it's interesting to see that Romo is the commissioner of the Rays League. Let's hear it straight from the horse's mouth, some of the things he's thinking about. There it is. There's the talented Mr. Ed. Now, Roto Experts in the morning. This is Sergio Romo and the King, Scott Engel.
Scott Engel here with veteran fantasy football player Sergio Romo of the Rays. Sergio, how long have you been playing and how many titles do you have?
Let's see. I came into the league. I think I started about 2008, 2009. I started playing, and then I think I'm three titles in. I had with the Giants. Had three fantasy football titles also with the Giants is what I meant.
You've won it all with everything. It's obvious, but I like to hear it in your own words. What's the difference between winning a real championship and a fantasy championship?
Bragging rights to the world in comparison to bragging rights to your team. I think that's from the joking matter, from the joking side of things, talk a little smack to my teammates or whatever, and then it's a good thing to win a fantasy league championship. I mean, it's... You own them, you know what I mean? What can you say? You ended up on top, But obviously the different, big difference is one is real, one is fake. But then again, there's a prize to win also in fantasy football, so that's definitely real. So either way, it's fun both ways.
So I understand you're the commissioner of the Rays Clubhouse League. Is it a thankless job?
It really is a thankless job. I'm over here commissioning, go figure. But it is what it is. I mean, it's fun to be commissioner at times, but then again, once you got good guys in the league, run a simple, sturdy league, and one they could trust, and it becomes fun. And plus, I like giving a platform for some extracurricular fun, too, in that.
Do people, ever raise an eyebrow when the commissioner makes a trade?
No. We give the league an opportunity to veto if they want, we give everybody an opportunity to veto. So everyone has an opinion. Everybody's opinion matters in our league. But we're kind of straightforward, and you got something to say, So we kind of, like I said, there's a platform for some extra things like that. So it makes it a fun league.
All right, since you're an experienced guy, I'm going to give you some of my tougher on-the-clock questions. Some of the other guys I was asking stuff like Carson Wentz versus Deshaun Watson and Saquon Barkley versus Alvin Kamara, but let's go a little deeper with you. At quarterback, who would you rather pick if you were on the clock between Jared Goff and Patrick Mahomes, and why?
Oh, wow. I would go with Jared Goff on that one. The offensive line is a little, it's a little more established, and they did boost the line too. They got some extra weapons on the side for Goff, and plus, with the running game secured for sure, and the huge dump off option too, on the pass plays Gurley. I would definitely go Goff on that one.
Running back, Joe Mixon of the Bengals or Kenyon Drake of the Dolphins?
I'm going Joe Mixon. I think last year he had an opportunity to establish himself, and towards the end of the season he started to do a little bit better in doing that. So I think he's hungry. I think he's going to come at him. And plus, you got – there's other names out there too with the Bengals. I mean, weapons there too that they got to worry about. So I think Joe Mixon hungry.
Wide receiver, Tyreek Hill versus Stephon Diggs.
I'm taking Stephon Diggs on that one. When you're lining up on the opposite side of Adam Thielen, and or Thielen lines up in the slot next to you, or you're in the slot next to Thielen, I mean, I'm telling you, it's just they got to pay attention to Thielen too. Plus, Diggs, he got wheels, he got hands, he's a good route runner. I mean, yeah, I would go Diggs on that one.
Jack Doyle or Kyle Rudolph?
I mean, you would think Kyle Rudolph. I would pick Kyle Rudolph on. You know what? I'm gonna pick Kyle Rudolph on that one. I mean, look at the. I just mentioned Diggs and I mentioned Thielen. So I think this is that offense is extremely impressive. And plus, they're getting Dalvin Cook back. I mean, holy cow! Like, yeah, I'm gonna go Kyle Rudolph on that one. Yeah.
Who's your favorite NFL team?
I'm a Los Angeles Rams fan from the childhood. They get sent to St. Louis. I gotta still root for them, but I'm a San Francisco Niners fan.
So you're both?
No, I grew up a Rams fan. I moved to San Francisco.
Right.
I love San Francisco. San Francisco's been good to me. Kind of inherited the Niners. Started following them too. Like I said, I was 12 years old when the Rams left L.A. for St. Louis, and I wasn't too happy when they did that. So let's just say I stayed on the West Coast.
How excited are you about Jimmy Garoppolo and this new offense?
I tell you, I think the offense, it's a little, how do you say, it has more risk than it normally does in the passing game. I think them too, they getting McKinnon, I think that's going to help them out. You know, McKinnon's a proven back. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He's a decent pass blocker. You know, he's definitely a three-down back in my eyes. I think he did that really well. He established himself last year. And plus, I mean, young weapons. I mean, he's got young weapons and hungry weapons too, I think. So, yeah, I'm looking at the line too. The line's better. They improved the offensive line too. So defense definitely got better in the draft. So, I mean, it's
– And with Sherman.
It's – I even forgot about that. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, it's going to be a better team, that's for sure.
So not that you ever played fantasy baseball or how it works, but since I can hear you're a savvy fantasy football player, I have used one of my fantasy baseball closers.
I hear that.
When you're the waiver wire pickup instead of the guy going to the waiver wire and somebody's got you on their fantasy baseball team, how much do you take it as a compliment because you play fantasy sports?
No, I mean, it definitely makes me feel pretty good. You know, it's a good feeling when people – like yourself, you walked away, hey, you're on my fantasy team. That's what's up. Keep up the good work. I'm kind of looking, I'm like, hey, thanks for the points. I'm like, looking at the points. Oh, that's right. You know, stuff like that. So, like, the kid in me, the fan of baseball in me, you know, like I'm a fan of fantasy sports also. So, I mean, I'm thankful for that. I mean, it does definitely make you feel pretty good about yourself.
There you have it. That's Sergio Romo of the Tampa Bay Rays with our guy, the King, Scott Engel. Scotty, a lot to break down there. He's clearly knowledgeable when it comes to fantasy football, you know, talking about the return of, say, a Dalvin Cook or how they got Jerick McKinnon down there in San Francisco. But I got to tell you, Scott, for someone who seems like is a big-time football fan, the fact that he was a Rams fan and then changed fandom, like, within the division to become a 49ers fan, that kind of surprised me. Scotty.
Yeah.
Scotty's still on. Oh, there he is.
If one team moves, you know, and they leave, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Did we lose
to me,
Scotty
that makes
again?
A lot of sense. No.
Yeah, no, I hear
me,
you.
To me, that makes a lot of sense.
That is a valid reason. Listen, my lady, who is still sleeping right now, you know, used to be is from San Diego, is a big-time Chargers fan and has let go of the Chargers because they moved, you know, so I understand that. You feel kind of abandoned. Listen, though, Scotty, we were talking about Jack Doyle. Do you think maybe Sergio Romo's a little bit afraid of Eric Ebron also? He's picking Rudolph over Doyle.
I think, I also have Rudolph over Doyle. I don't think it's an Ebron thing.
I know. Yeah. Fair enough. One other thing I wanted to ask you about that before we dive into some of these post-hype sleepers, and definitely, you know, the King, Scotty Engel, spending some time with baseball players, talking to them about football, fantasy football. I think that's always interesting to see, you know, just like anybody else, guys. They talk about how it's bragging rights, you know. Sergio Romo kind of smiled and laughed. He's like, yeah, I own them after winning a title. So I think, you know, you could see how fantasy sports brings people together. That's why we love what we do here at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You asked him a question about like how he's the commissioner, like when he makes trades, do people kind of raise an eyebrow or something? And he mentioned that, you know, there's a chance to veto. And that's what I want to ask you about. Just generally speaking, Scott, in leagues, have you seen, what are some of the more creative ways you've seen about being able to like veto trades? A lot of the leagues that I'm in now, we kind of don't have that veto as much. We just say, listen, if you're in a grown-ass adult, you can kind of like, you know, if you want to fleece someone, you probably can. We just say that if a manager is inattentive or stuff like that, you just disinvite them from the league next year. How do you handle vetoes? Do you have any advice out there for people for any good ways to handle kind of trade vetoes? Is there a vote? Is it a commissioner decides? Is it an open policy? How do you handle that?
As far as vetoes go, I'm not a fan of vetoes whatsoever. I mean, especially in my leagues. If you're going to make a bad trade, unless there's collusion, there's no reason for the commissioner to get involved, because if somebody's going to make a bad trade, let them learn their lesson. And instead of crying about the, you know, who made a trade ahead of you in the standings, how about you just worry about your own team and catch them instead of worrying about what they're doing? I see people will fill up the veto box just to prevent another team from getting better. And that's not what the veto is about. I think, you know, there's also commissioner approvals and non-approvals, and, you know, it becomes subjective. I say unless you can detect some collusion, I'm not a fan of vetoing whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with you. I let like you're saying, we're all adults here, right? If someone gets fleeced in a trade, then like you say, they take their
learn your
and
lesson
and they learn the hard way. Absolutely. If someone just becomes so non-competitive or something like that, maybe you then just don't invite them back the following year for competitive balance. But I agree with you. Like if there's a sniff of collusion, that's when maybe a league or the league commissioner needs to get involved. You know, I play in one of my biggest home leagues have a few sets of brothers that are good friends of mine from all the way back in the day. And anytime you see a trade that's like one brother trading with another one, and in a dynasty league where there's keepers and stuff like that, and one of them is a buyer and one of them's a seller, you know, it's just like, oh, you just made your brother a kingmaker by selling, you know, by selling a value for now for like a draft pick for next year. Interesting. I would have given you better for that, you know, that sort of thing. But I agree with you. Generally speaking, I also don't like the power of veto. I think, listen, let everybody kind of learn on their own. And that's I'm going to try to take advantage and help myself win my league and win that cash. Anything else from the Sergio Romo interview, Scott, that you thought was interesting that you took away from it?
I like somebody that, you know, is so experienced. I could ask him Goff versus Mahomes. And, you know, he had a little trouble deciding there because there's a lot of upside from Mahomes. What else was interesting, too, though, you know, it was Ryan Stanek, the starting pitcher for that night, was in the locker next to us listening to the interview. And, you know, you can't talk to the starting pitcher on the night he pitches, but you know, he wanted to talk fantasy football with us, which was very which was a lot of fun. But you know, Sergio Romo is like, it's like you talk about. It's like, you know, every major league clubhouse has a fantasy football league. These guys are into it just as much as we are, and you know, they're very, very intense. It brings out their competitiveness, and it's one of the things that the guys get to do when they have a lot of downtime, because people don't realize how much baseball players have downtime on the planes, in the locker rooms, etc. In the locker rooms before the games, people are either talking fantasy football garbage by August, or they're playing cards, or both.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for me what it is we talk about, you know, these guys, these athletes as professional athletes. We hold them up on these pedestals and stuff. But when it comes down to it, they're just like us. You know, they want to have fun. They want to be able to have bragging rights. They want to be able to talk smack to their friends or people that they work with and have things that build culture among their colleagues, just the same as you at your office or wherever it is that you go ahead and work. So I think it's great. And to see a little bit behind the curtain, the way they think about it. Right, Scotty?
The stakes are higher, and they get to do
I'm
it
sure.
in a way that we would all love to do it. It's, you know, I've seen, you know, some leagues go up to 10 grand. I'm not going to say which ones for an entry fee. And, you know, a lot of all these baseball teams will hold their drafts on the road. They'll rent out a hotel ballroom.
Right.
And a lot of times they'll buy 12 jerseys of the guys who they expect to be pick with the top 12, and they'll they'll present the guys with their jerseys. A few years ago with the Atlanta Braves, they had just done their draft in New York, and all the guys had their first-round picks of their jerseys hanging in the lockers when I arrived there.
That's really cool. The only thing I'd worry about, if you're playing in a fantasy football league with your baseball team, a lot of leagues then drafting in August, and hopefully none of the guys in your fantasy league are one of those like waiver wire trades in Major League Baseball and then aren't with the team anymore. That would be the only thing
that,
I would
that worry
That
happens
about.
Where a guy leaves a team, he gets cut, or traded, or whatever. He's still in the league for the
still
rest of the season.
League.
But on draft day, you have to be part of the team in some capacity in order to be in the league. And sometimes the leagues will be all players. Sometimes they'll include PR guys and, you know, video trainers. But a lot of times, too, though, you'll see the staff have a separate league. But the trash talk will bleed from the players over to, like, the team staffers and stuff like that. So, you know, it's another way of building community.
Yep, absolutely. That's what I was saying. You know, building culture among your job and your colleagues, no matter if it's a baseball locker room or an office. So that's absolutely cool to see. And as the summer rolls along, our guy Scotty Engel will be asking some other Major League Baseball players about the culture of their fantasy leagues, about what they're getting ready for fantasy football. But as I mentioned, Scott, as part of the Roto Experts exclusive edge package, one of the articles there is these post-type sleepers out of there from Bobby McMahon, who does a great job writing for Roto Experts. I want to ask you a little bit about this, because, you know, he kind of broke it into different tiers of, like, how much you're sleeping on these guys. And the first group here is really a bunch of guys. He says, don't sleep too long because there's still plenty of potential, right? So this is maybe guys aren't sleeping on them that much, okay? Maybe they haven't fully lived up to expectations, but someone's still going to take a shot on them in drafts this year. And it's interesting because there's a couple of young receivers I want to ask you about. One is Devontae Parker of the Dolphins. One is Mike Williams of the Chargers. And one is Zay Jones of the Buffalo Bills. Now, Scotty, you know, I can make a case for all of these guys, you know, to be the kind of the one out of these three that might, in fact, realize their potential. We've talked about Mike Williams and how he stands to potentially benefit the most, especially in the green zone, given the injury to Hunter Henry there. We talk about Zay Jones and, you know, whatever that incident was in a hotel with his brother and stuff, notwithstanding over the offseason, when we were talking about wide receiver groups last week, Scott, we both said that Buffalo may be one of the weakest in the entire NFL. So there's opportunity there if Zay Jones were to take a step forward. And when we talk about Devontae Parker, this is a guy who people have said the skill has been there for a while. Will he have the health and will he have truly the opportunity to break out? But remember there's a lot of targets to go around. Because they have lost Jarvis Landry down there in Miami. Out of these three guys, Scotty, which one would you take first? Which one do you think has the biggest chance for that breakout to catch people that they were sleeping on him?
You have Devontae Parker ranked ahead, but I feel like Mike Williams is a better value. Devontae Parker is going to get opportunity, but I don't know if opportunity's always going to lead to production, because can this guy, you know, face top cover corners if in a zone they roll the defense to his side? Is he good enough? You know, Jake Seeley will say talent always wins out. I don't think it always does. Devontae Parker is very talented, but he A, hasn't been able to stay healthy. B, he hasn't been consistent. What makes us think with a better opportunity that necessarily that we're going to see better production? To me, I worry about expanded opportunity with Devontae Parker because you're going to get more expectations on a guy who hasn't proved it yet. So I'm worried about Devontae Parker. If you ask me who I like best in this group, it's Mike Williams because he was hurt all throughout last year. This is his true rookie year. You know, they lost Hunter Henry in the red zone, and this guy has spectacular red zone skills, very acrobatic, great catch radius, etc. So out of the three, I really like Mike Williams in this group.
Yeah, I like Mike Williams. And the other thing I think about, Scotty, and check me if I'm crazy here, another thing I think about when I'm kind of splitting hairs on guys like this who are similar in a lot of ways is I look at their offenses in general. When I think about the Dolphins offense, the Bills offense, or the Chargers offense, and you ask me which of these offenses are going to put up more production, are going to score more points, to me it is absolutely easily the Los Angeles Chargers. So when I think about like the size of the pie, you know, the Chargers pie guy is so much bigger than, for me, Miami or in Buffalo, that I'd rather the more productive offense, thinking that there's going to be more chances for touchdowns, more chances for production. So I agree with you, Mike Williams, and I also think that he is going to take an interesting chunk that was left by Hunter Henry.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, too. And look, Zay Jones showed some flashes last year, and I think, you know, he has a chance to get a lot better. You know, I do like Zay Jones as a post-type sleeper.
Okay.
I don't know how much hype there was on him, but, you know, I do like him.
That's true. I mean, coming out of college, there was some hype out of him coming out of, I believe, Eastern Carolina. He had one of the best, like, I think he, like, led the nation in catches one year before his career, something like that. So there was some buzz, but we'll see what happens up there in Buffalo. I'll tell you what, I'd rather a wide receiver in Los Angeles for the Chargers than one up there in Buffalo, generally speaking, all things being equal. There's a number of other players that, you know, that Bobby McMahon mentions, but there's two quarterbacks in here that I think are interesting. And, you know, I've been saying this when it related to Jameis Winston about, like, how long do you wait for them to kind of be shed as a bust? And the two quarterbacks that are in this article here are Marcus Mariota and then also Ryan Tannehill, again down there in Miami. Now, which of these guys do you think are more set up to take a step forward and realize their potential?
I think it's definitely Mariota. He had an off year last year, but I think he'll bounce back with some improved production around him. You know, having Deion Lewis catch the ball out of the backfield, maybe if Corey Davis steps up. I think there's zero chance for Ryan Tannehill to, you know, impress us at all. He hasn't shown anything when he's healthy to show us that he's going to have any more upside than he already has. This is what Alex Smith used to be. Once in a while, he would have a good game and sometimes even a big one, but he's fantasy mediocrity through and through.
Yeah, listen, I don't like Ryan Tannehill. You know, I don't think that he's not someone who moves the needle for me.
The Dolphins have not had a good quarterback since Marino retired. The best quarterback is the damn Marino statue outside the stadium.
Yeah, and whoever was playing quarterback for in those Ace Ventura movies as well. The one thing I would say, though, Scotty, is, you know, the Tennessee Titans, I know it's a new head coach and they're going away from the exotic smash mouth, right? But in Tennessee, do they trust Mariota enough to put the ball in his hands just to have enough dropbacks and attempts to return value as a fantasy owner?
Yeah, and, you know, where you kind of put that in the middle is when you get a guy like Deion Lewis,
right?
You know, who can, when the targets are not there downfield, you could swing it out to a guy like him.
All right, absolutely. Remember, you're going to get more insight. Check out this article from Bobby McMahon here on the idea of the post-hype sleepers. He has a lot of other good ideas of people not to sleep on in your drafts coming up for fantasy football this year. Scotty, good hour. Tomorrow, we'll go into some other articles, and maybe we'll start to talk about your running back rankings. We'll also cover all the news and notes, and we'll have another interview. Baseball players talking fantasy football. Remember the promo code THEKING when you're getting the Roto Edge exclusive fantasy football package. Everything you need to win your leagues and win that cash this football season. Have a good rest of the day, Scotty, all right? We'll talk more injuries. We'll talk more
good stuff.
Oh, get it going. We got one feeling. Sing it for me, Scotty. Yeah, there it is. It's Roto Experts in the morning.
I love the way you dance.
We put the fun in functional sports radio. The all-in kid gets the hot tag from Scott Angle. We come back on Roto Experts in the morning. Come on right back.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me the Speeds, the Spitting Statistician. The King, Scott Angle, has made the hot tag to the all-in kid, and we're going to continue to chop it up about fantasy football, getting yourselves ready to win your leagues and win that cash. Big weekend for Jake. When I talked to him on Friday, he said he was going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp. So I got to ask you, Jake, as we get started here on a Monday, what was better this weekend, Ant-Man or the Wasp, or the feeling when you realized that you were Fantasy Pro's number one rated ranker, taking the title and all the praise that comes with it? Congrats on that. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing good. Well, I mean, I knew about that for the before the weekend, so I can enjoy both of them.
You can enjoy both of them, but it's got to feel good. You know, I know you put in a lot of work, Jake, and to have that be recognized, not only recognized, but I guess like celebrated as proven true. Jake is the number one ranker in fantasy football, and that is another reason why you need to go out and get the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package, because if you want the best rankings in the entire industry, they belong to our guy, the all-in kid. I am honored to have him as a part of our team. But did it surpass the joy of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Jake?
No, that's what I was saying. I think both are good. Both are really good.
All right, fair enough. That's good. I do want to ask you, though, Jake, how do they actually evaluate these things? You know, what's their formula to see? Do they just, like, take your projections and then put them up against the actuary at the very end and, like, have some formula to figure out what the variance was or the delta was at each position? How do they actually come to that?
No, they don't do projections. They do rankings. They did everybody's rankings from the industry and how accurate it's. I don't know how to.
And then at the end of the season?
Yeah, you have to go check out on their website to understand it, because it's not just if you rank somebody one and they finished one. It's more complicated than that. That like I said, you just got to go there.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of formula for like how far you are off and rank weighting and stuff like that. But I guess the one other basic question before you don't have to go down the rabbit hole with it, Jake, is how do they assume a specific kind of scoring, or did they do a composite of like when you do PPR and standard and half point and that all goes into a pot together?
No, it's non-PPR scoring.
Okay, it's based on just like the standard ranks per se. Because like, I mean, they could have a formula like you're saying that's complicated, but another layer of that can be do it with everybody's standard ranks and with everybody's PPR ranks. And then that's just like another layer to the formula, another calculation to get the ultimate output. But however they arrive at it, when it popped out of the widget machine, our guy, Jake Seeley, the all-in kid, was number one. So congrats again, Jake, you know, helping add credibility to Roto Experts in the Morning. And all the more reason you guys need to go on over and get that package. Enter the promo code ALLINKID for your special discounts. I got to tell you, though, Jake, Scotty was very particular. In hour number one, everybody has to use the promo code THEKING.
That's fine. He wasn't number one, so.
Fair enough. Hey, Jake, let me bounce some news and notes off you from over the weekend that I thought was interesting and try to spin it forward to a question that you can give us some insight on. We saw that Le'Veon Bell, while he's like, you know, closer in talks than last year, the reports out are that it looks like he's going to once again hold out for training camp. This is a guy who has missed, you know, the entire preseason pretty much before. Now, here's my question for you, Jake, and obviously Le'Veon Bell is a top three talent. Obviously, we know Le'Veon Bell should be drafted regardless of if he's holding out or not. But as someone who has had Le'Veon Bell on his dynasty team since his rookie year when he was coming back from a knee injury and I got him at value as the sixth round draft pick in his rookie year, I've had him forever. And I know that there has been seasons where, because of either the suspensions or the holdouts, in weeks like 1 and 2, he didn't really hit the ground running as much. Should I be, as a longtime L. Bell owner, concerned at all about his early season performance? Remember D'Angelo Williams early in the season in years past? Should I worry at all about it taking a little bit of time for Le'Veon to get up to speed early in the season?
No, I'm not. I want him. I'd rather he doesn't play, honestly, because
really?
I'd rather just.
Let's tread on the tire.
No, I just don't want him to get hurt. I don't want to see somebody get hurt in the preseason or even in the training camp, and we've seen it before. At least this way, I know that he's healthy when the season starts. I couldn't care less if Le'Veon Bell doesn't even play the preseason at all. If he's playing week one, that's all I care about. I just don't want him to hold out into the season.
Got you. So it's fine if he stays in bubble wrap. We just don't want him hurt. Because, listen, people will get hurt, and it sucks all the time. That's why sometimes when you have your fantasy – it's inevitable. You have your fantasy football draft in sometime in mid-August, and then literally the following week, someone big, someone's, like, second-round pick goes down. So I hear you. Hopefully that won't be Le'Veon Bell. Jake, another thing I saw over the weekend is – you know, we talk about the death of the Legion of Boom. We talk about how Cam Chancellor's not coming back, how Richard Sherman is, you know, kind of elsewhere in the division. There's still buzz about this Earl Thomas to the Dallas Cowboys kind of talk, you know. And I know we don't know how much this moves the needle. We don't talk much about these defense, but this is a defensive player of the year kind of candidate. We know the impact he does have on the defense. The way I'll spin it to you is this, Jake. You know, if I had to ask you a percent chance that Earl Thomas will be a member of the Seahawks come week one, I wonder what you would say. I posed a similar question to our guy Scott Engel, who you know is a big-time Seattle fan, and he said right around two-thirds. He said right around 66% that he thinks Thomas still will be with Seattle once the season starts. What do you think? Do you think Thomas is on the move anywhere, or do you think he stays in Seattle?
I honestly have no idea, and I honestly don't, and I honestly don't care, just because I don't really think it does much either way. I don't think it's not, if they still have Earl Thomas, it's going to be a defense you need to be scared of. I don't think if he leaves, it's going to be the worst defense in the league. I really don't. I don't think it does enough to Dallas either way as well. I love Earl Thomas, and I was actually, when he was coming out of college, I wanted the Giants to draft him, but it's still one player out of 11 on the defense. It's not even on the defensive line. I mean, it's not even a shutdown corner. I mean, you look at Landon Collins, how great he was and how great he is, and look how bad the Giants defense was last year. Like, one safety isn't going to turn the tide that much. So I really don't think I think we're just spending way too much time on this every single week. Not you, it's just every single week they're talking about Earl Thomas. And I mean, trades rarely happen in the NFL to begin with, and let alone the fact of what the impact is going to be. I don't think we're spending, I think we're spending way much more time than the impact's actually going to be.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I do think he is one of the players that, you know, has name notoriety, does kind of move the needle. I get when you say he's not a shutdown corner. Let me ask you this, and I'm not talking about Earl Thomas specifically, okay? I'm kind of zooming out a little bit, Jake. You know, you talk about the shutdown corner. However, in this kind of day and age, I've seen a little bit more in the last couple of years where defensive coordinators are putting an emphasis on getting that kind of safety, on getting that safety who can be that good center fielder, on being able to who can, say, cover a mismatch kind of tight end. You know, I think that the safety is becoming more and more of that little movable chess piece and having a little bit more impact on the defense as offenses become more spread and use more running backs and tight ends in the passing game. Do you buy that, Jake, at all, that the idea of the safety conceptually is becoming a bigger piece of the offense as we need less running backs, as there's less running game? You see a lot of these, like Deion Buchanan kind of safeties having a different role. I know the Jets doubled down drafting safeties with May and Adams a few years back. You know, do you think that safety in general is becoming more of a premier position a la shutdown corner?
Nope. That's pretty much what I was just saying about that. Yeah.
You don't think safeties do it?
No, I just name the best safety in the league.
Right now?
Yeah.
You know, I guess I would say maybe over there in Baltimore, Eric Waddle. Waddle.
Yeah. Okay. So even so, how much is he doing on his own?
Yeah. I hear you.
That's what I'm saying. I'd rather have a shutdown corner. I'd rather have
an edge rusher.
It can make that much of a difference. Or somebody on the defensive line. My point B is, like, even if you want to say, one is, it's like, maybe it's Weddle. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's somebody else. Like, and the fact is, even if they are, I mean, it's
what are they doing?
Difference. What's the difference? And the fact is, yes, they can be your quarterback of the defense if it's somebody that's good enough. And yes, they can make an impact. I'm not saying that they can't. I'm just saying the fact is, Earl Thomas moving from one team to another or focusing on getting – I'll keep going back to the Giants. The Giants have one of the best safeties in the league in Landon Collins, and it meant nothing for their defense because it was one of the worst defenses in the league last year.
All right, so we'll see. We will, however, still keep an eye out on any kind of moves that do happen at this part of the season. The last piece I want to bang off of you, Jake, and it's because as we continue our team-by-team previews, we talked about the AFC West last week, so we'll flip it over to the other conference and do the NFC West this week. Okay, and we're going to start today with the Arizona Cardinals. One of the guys that I'm mentioning, there was some buzz this weekend, but again, as we know, this is, you know, everybody in the best shape of their life. Everybody's going going to break out. Beat reporters are predicting a breakout season for Arizona Cardinals tight end Ricky Seals-Jones. Now, Jake, I know this is like we're already dancing at this party. We've already had cocktail hour at this party. We're already dipping our chips in the guac at this party, okay? I understand we have been there. And now other people are predicting kind of this breakout for Ricky Seals-Jones. The way I want to ask you about it, last week, Jake, we talked about how, again, conceptually, you know, speaking, we wait on quarterback, we wait until it comes to you, and there's like this group of, there's like this wide tier of people we would be comfortable and happy with at the quarterback position. We've mentioned names like Wentz and Rivers and Stafford and the like. We set that aside. I'm making the comparison to the tight end position, which you've also said may not be exactly the same, but it's similar where you have that kind of elite talent. You have that middle tier of like name brand guys. And then, I don't know, call it tight end, maybe eight all the way tight end all the way. I don't know, maybe 15. It's kind of what I call the Baskin Robbins tier, Jake, right? Different flavors for different people. Depends on what you kind of like. And we believe Ricky Seals-Jones is going to potentially be in that tier. My question for you, Jake, is this. One, how big of a breakout do you expect for Ricky Seals-Jones? But more importantly, how big is that quote unquote Baskin Robbins kind of tier for the tight ends? I call it, say, tight end 8 to 15. How big is that tier, and are you comfortable getting whatever flavor tight end falls to you within that tier, a la the Baskin Robbins analogy?
If you don't get one of the first five, I'd say that's pretty much what most people are going to end up with, and that's why I don't have a problem drafting two tight ends this year and casting one aside in the first 2 weeks when you need a waiver pickup. I mean, if you want to take the problem with the Trey Burton thing is people are pushing him near that top, mm-hmm. I would actually go, like, you know, like you said, maybe eight is a good number, but I mean the top five or actually the top three would be the one, and then the top eight.
That's a clear tier, right?
But the point being is, like, you know, you can live with one of those if you got Kyle Rudolph. I'm not drafting a second tight end. It's more of if I miss one of those and now I'm gonna have to draft a Jack Doyle and a Ricky Seals-Jones or a Vance McDonald and a David Njoku or something like that. It's just the fact that, yeah, they could break out, but at the same time, there's certainly a case where they're just the same non-existent fantasy tight end that I had last year. So you draft two at the end of the draft. I mean, most of the running backs and wide receivers on the board at that point are pretty much in the same territory of they could break out or not have any value at your team whatsoever. Like if you want Deshaun Jackson or Ricky Seals-Jones, I mean, either way is fine by me.
Right. So to recap, correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, but you're saying there is that elite group at the top, right? The Ertz, Kelsey, and obviously Rob Gronkowski. Then, and depending on your rankings, right, this next tier could have four, maybe five tight ends in it. That's where we're talking about the Olsons, the Ingrams, the Rudolphs, the Delaney Walkers, those guys who are not elite, but if you are going ahead and getting them, you don't necessarily need the risk of drafting, say, the second tight end. When you get after that, when we're talking about the Burtons, when we're talking about the Kittles, when we're talking about the Ricky Seals-Jones and others that we've talked about, you're okay with them because they have as good of a chance to pop as any. You keep on mentioning, right, the idea of like 50 catches, 550 or 600 yards and five touchdowns. That will get you ultimately, when all is said and done, in back end tight end one rank. So you take your shot, but you're just recommending if you're at that level to go ahead and at some point in the draft take two shots so you have the better chance of finding the one that actually does take that step and wind up at back end tight end one. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
Fair enough. You know, sometimes I just like to clarify because I want to make sure that we are clear moving forward and that we're giving everybody here listening to Roto Experts in the Morning everything they need to win their leagues and win that cash. Jake, do you agree as we talk about the Arizona Cardinals here on Roto Experts in the Morning, Ricky Seals-Jones is potentially the guy who will have the third highest amount of targets on the Arizona Cardinals? You think about Larry Fitzgerald as their wide receiver. We all know about him. We know about David Johnson. Do you think Ricky Seals-Jones gets more targets than David Johnson or vice versa? Who's the actual number two target getter in this offense, Jake?
It's David Johnson. That's not even a question.
Okay, so does that mean Ricky Seals-Jones is third, or do you take a guy like, let's then put him vis-a-vis, say, the rookie out of Texas A&M, Christian Kirk? Do you believe in Christian Kirk as a number two receiver on this team? Are you going to have shares of him this year, Jake?
I believe in him as that, but I don't know how the Cardinals are going to use him because so far through training camps and OTAs and stuff like that, that he's been lining up after and behind Larry Fitzgerald only in the slot. He can play outside, but it's going to come down to how the team treats him.
Okay, so we'll see. We'll see. And again, and you say this about a lot of teams, Jake. It's about, like, you know, we talk about, I like to mention the XYZ affair. Like, are they being used in the outside? Are they being used in the slot? And I've seen Larry Fitzgerald move to the slot over the last, oh, I don't know, Jake, correct, like, what, 4 years, let's say? You know, and has gotten great years on his career. He's gotten over 100 catches toiling out of the slot. I just don't see Christian Kirk, because he's a small guy, I don't see him really as an outside receiver necessarily. So it's going to be interesting to see how they use him. Jake, I want to get your take when we come to the Arizona Cardinals. I got to get your take on the quarterback position, right? Like, I mean, I know that, you know, currently they have Sam Bradford there. We know they drafted Josh Rosen. We know Sam Bradford has been, for most of his career, an injury liability. We know, as you said many times, that talent wins out, that they may want to try to, you know, they're not going to let the kids sit for long. The fans will be clamoring for the most popular position in all the sports, which is the backup quarterback. Do you see this as a day one thing, or do you see this more as a, like, Kurt Warner, Eli Manning play kind of 7 or 8 games and then hand the baton? How do you see this evolution taking place in Arizona this year as it relates to Bradford and Rosen?
I think it'll just be whatever. Bradford honestly gets hurt. The fact that why bench him for Rosen? I mean, this team isn't going for the playoffs. It's kind of in the middle. You know, it's not 100% looking towards, hey, we're tanking this year. So it'll probably be Bradford for half the season and Rosen for half the season. I mean, honestly, this is, you just stay away from the quarterback when you're drafting this team anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would agree with that. I think the question is, when does the change happen? What if I said, Jake, let's take, you know, I completely agree with you. I'm staying away from this. The one thing I would say is, if you're in a dynasty league, right, or if you're in a league where you're drafting just rookies, could that be a little bit different for you, Jake? If you're in a dynasty league, do you see more potential with Josh Rosen being kind of like the incumbent moving forward as this team starts to, you know, try to get better out of what I predict will be the basement of the NFC West? If you're in a dynasty league, are you liking Rosen a little bit more vis-a-vis some of these other quarterbacks this year?
Well, what are the other quarterbacks? I mean, that's
versus the other rookies, Jake.
I mean, obviously better than Josh Allen. I mean, anything's better than Josh Allen, but I'd still take Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson before the rest of them, and that has nothing to do with the fact that Josh Rosen might not even, he might even be able to start week one. I mean, the fact is, mm-hmm. if he performs on the same level as Sam Bradford, it's, you know, why not start the clock? Why not get him ready and out there? Just because they paid that money for Sam Bradford, I don't think that's going to keep them from using Josh Rosen if Josh Rosen proves himself capable. I mean, you can kind of look at the fact that, granted, the player was far less of a talent than Bradford was, but when Matt Flynn was brought in for the Seahawks, and you look right at the fact they went to Russell Wilson immediately, is because he was the better talent. So if you're being outplayed, it's not going to stop the team from using you just because they spent the money. So I definitely think that Rosen's ready. I'll take him over Allen. But there's the Baker Lamar Jackson in a dynasty. If I don't need a quarterback right now, it'd still be my first one, and then Baker Mayfield before I even got to Rosen.
Okay, what about Darnold vis-a-vis Rosen? Yeah.
Either one if you want. I prefer Rosen, but either way you want to go. I'm not going to say you're crazy if you want Darnold.
Fair enough. And you know, Jake, all I'm trying to do is prevent you from saying that you think I'm crazy. So just to recap, you say you like Rosen and Mayfield. You would go Mayfield, Lamar, Rosen, Darnold?
No, Lamar.
One, then Baker, then Rosen and Darnold are kind of similar, and Allen below them.
Oh, yeah. Allen's not even... I wouldn't even waste my time taking out.
Well, the Buffalo Bills wasted their time. So some people out there believe that that is something to be true. Let me ask you this. The last thing I want to ask you before we kind of maybe dive into their schedule, their over-under, their win total over on mybookie.ag. I'm going to preface this. I asked you guys this about a month ago when it was you and Scotty Engel together for an hour. And you guys were both like, never, zero, no. And I understand. David Johnson is, you know, a first-round draft pick. He's a top 4 running back, let's say, a top 3 running back. Some people have him as high as number 1. I acknowledge that. I understand that. My concern, and I don't even, concern is too strong of a word, Jake, I guess, but the last time we saw David Johnson, Bruce Arians was the head coach and Carson Palmer was the quarterback. Now, you know, we have like Steve Wilks as the head coach and we have who knows as the quarterback, maybe Bradford, maybe Rosen. those things, regardless of who the player is, and I understand, I love David Johnson, but, you know, Bruce Arians was a kind of like mad bomber, you know, kind of stretch the field kind of guy. Carson Palmer, established veteran, Pro Bowl fringe kind of quarterback. That's not the case right now. We don't know what the offense looks like under the new head coach, and we don't know about this quarterback play. I'm not saying I'm worried about David Johnson, but, like, these are things that are not in place for, say, Ezekiel Elliott or a Todd Gurley or a Le'Veon Bell or some of these other running backs at the top. You know, talk to me about, not necessarily if you have doubts about David Johnson, because I know you don't, but, like, what is that like for a player moving into a new scheme? There's got to be some kind of transition, no?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't matter when you have a talent like David Johnson. There's nothing. I mean, he's not going to be affected one way or another.
You don't think there's going to be any impact of him learning a new system, kind of with a potentially a rookie quarterback?
No, he's not a quarterback. He's a running back. No, not at all.
Right, but the quarterback will be new on some level, so there's no concern.
And somebody
there
with a lot of experience in Sam Bradford. So no, I don't.
Right,
I'm not worried about David Johnson at all.
We are not worried about David Johnson at all. I mean, neither am I. I'm not worried about him. He is a first-round pick. I understand that. But, like, I'm just saying, when I zoom out, generally speaking, I don't know. Something about this Cardinals team feels a little awry to me, I got to tell you that, in a division where San Francisco is ascending. We know about the Rams. Even though that the Seattle window is slightly closing, we still know that they are kind of a blue-chip franchise, shall we say. I think it's going to unravel a little bit for the Cardinals this year. So that's why I look at the over-under total, Jake. When I go to mybookie.ag, I see the over-under for the Arizona Cardinals is 5.5. Okay, and I find it's difficult for me with some of these low win totals, right? Because I might think the team is not going to be that strong this year, but 5.5 is pretty low. Do I think they go all the way down to 5-11 or worse? I'm not so sure. I think I would pass if someone put a gun to my head. I think I would take the under. I don't see this team winning many games, but I don't know if I would actually put any shekels on the 5.5, Jake. What do you think about the season win total for the Arizona Cardinals? It's standing at 5.5 right now on mybookie.ag.
Yeah, I would take the under. It's just
you would.
The fact that, outside of the quarterback, Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, this team has very little talent left. I mean, they have some on the defense. They have a piece here and there, but you know, I could like Ricky Seals-Jones to break out. I can like Christian Kirk all I want, but the fact is that you look at this roster top to bottom, it's probably one of the worst five rosters in the league.
Yep, I said that as well. Talking to Scotty, I said I expect the Arizona Cardinals to be picking in the top five in next year's draft. The King, however, does not. The King expects much bigger things from the Arizona Cardinals. He definitively takes the over. He thinks the Cardinals may, in fact, even be better than the San Francisco 49ers, so much so that the next day, Jake, I had to dig up, mybookie.ag has odds on all of the NFL teams making the playoffs, okay? And literally, the worst odds in the entire NFL just to make the playoffs is the Arizona Cardinals at plus 800, even worse than Cleveland at plus 600, the Dolphins and the Jets at plus 600. So I agree with you. I think this is an under. I think they're going to be drafting very, very early. And because of that, I think they're going to be even more likely to eventually turn the reins over to Josh Rosen to let him kind of take his bumps and bruises and learn on the job. Jake, one thing I do want to ask you, because I'm glad we agree that the idea that the Cardinals are not necessarily going to be strong, right? I want to ask you about kind of predicting, using that and predicting game flow in certain games and predicting that for, say, DFS or some of the players that you like. Remember when the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jake, were kind of a laughing stock, but Blake Bortles or Allen Robinson was still viable fantasy ads because of all the garbage time they had? What is your kind of working theory around teams that are bad like that? Do you try to anticipate? I know you don't try to anticipate, say, schedule and strength of schedule and how good teams are going to be, but to take that a bit further, do you ever think about the game flow of a specific game and be like, ah, for example, the Arizona Cardinals, they're going to be losing in the second half of games. They're going to be in their no-huddle offense. They're going to be facing prevent defenses a lot and kind of maybe that help the passing game of Arizona, help you like a Josh Rosen, help you like a guy like Ricky Seals-Jones, who maybe underneath, you know, gets more opportunity when the Cardinals are down by 2+ scores in the second half of games? How much does predicted game flow matter to you, Jake, when doing some of these projections for a team that might be losing a lot?
I'm not going to get caught up in it for the full season. I'll do it during the season when you talk about weekly and the matchups there. But again, I don't know how many times I have to tell everybody out there that, then I'm not saying it to you, I'm saying it to everybody else, is you don't predict schedules at the beginning of the seasons. They don't mean anything. Everybody always has assumptions, and halfway through the year, teams you thought were going to be cakewalks aren't. Teams that you thought were going to have no defense weren't. The Saints were supposed to be a matchup that you were supposed to exploit the entire season last year. And it was actually one that you were worried about and didn't want to have people facing and didn't want your passing game to face them. So the fact is, people make these assumptions every year. They draft off these assumptions, and they end up making a mistake because of it. If you want to do it week to week, you have to do it week to week and do it in the season, and then you start to base things off of that. But to do it for the full season is a mistake.
Okay, fair enough. So definitely a strategy that's viable, say, when you're playing DFS week to week. Definitely a viable strategy maybe within the season after you've had your draft, when you're considering which of your close guys, you know, to put in your flex position for your last kind of choice. Then you'd consider the matchups, but not something you put a whole lot of stock in going into the season because, you know, teams change from year to year. I remember there was something like a 4-year stretch where in the NFC South, literally the team that finished in last place wound up winning the division the following year. So I hear you on that. Jake, last quick thing as we touch on the Cardinals before we head on into break. We talked about Fitzgerald and Kirk. Are there any other pass catchers out there that we should worry about? J.J. Nelson, anybody like that at all that is going to sniff any kind of value for you in fantasy?
Not in seasonal that I'm concerned with. No, not at all.
When you say not in seasonal, what does that mean? Does that mean that potentially for like in a DFS, in a very like specific scenario, they could have some value?
Well, always. I mean, as we see that every single year, is somebody just hoping to get that 100 yards and touchdown game that, you know, we weren't expecting. You might be a DFS matchup throughout the year, but not in seasonal.
Not in season long. All right, so there you have it. Those are the Arizona Cardinals. And as I said, remember, go on over to rotoexperts.com. The Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package is live, okay? In-depth analysis from all your sports radio experts, including my guy, all-in kid, Jake Seeley. When we come back, we chop it up a little bit more with the all-in kid, the number one ranker in fantasy football. Come on back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, from the East Coast to the West Coast. We got you locked, helping you win your leagues and win that cash. Jake Seeley and Dane Martinez putting the fun and functional sports radio here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Jake, as I mentioned, you had a pretty good weekend, okay? Ant-Man and the Wasp, big things over there, getting ranked, getting kind of celebrated, let's say, as the number one ranker in all of fantasy football. But, you know, I follow you, Jake, on Twitter, and I check you out every now and then, and I have a small bone to pick with you, Jake. I got to tell you, I saw that, unfortunately, you also ended your streak for the cash this weekend, and you did so by going against your boy Speeds. How many times do I have to tell you, Jake, about that country, Belgium, in the World Cup? They took out your boys, Brazil, and you went with Brazil for your streak. And now you got to start a new one, Jake.
Yeah, and What's your point?
I'm just saying. My point is you got to listen to Speeds. I've been telling you about Belgium and Croatia all World Cup long, and they are still now two of the four teams left.
You were taking them as a best. It wasn't like you were saying that you thought they were going to be like the World Cup winners.
I do have them both to win. I have Croatia at 20-1, and I have Belgium at about.
Yeah,
I think
again,
like
you have them
one.
At 20-1. It wasn't like if
oh,
you're
no,
telling
there's
me
a reason
that if,
they're not 2-1. I understand that.
But that's my okay. So my point is, if somebody told you here's Belgium and here's Brazil even up, you would have taken Belgium.
I did pick Belgium to win this game. Yes, I did. I've been on them the entire time. I did happen to pick them, but I'm just saying, Jay, come on, you gotta. You know, you got to listen to the insights sometimes. They got plenty of world-class players out there. Lukaku, De Bruyne, and obviously Hazard were killing it up front. We'll see as we move along. There are now four teams left in Russia, and I guess Putin couldn't keep the collusion going on over the weekend, Jake. It's unfortunate.
I don't think the fact that they made it that far was fine.
it absolutely was. As I mentioned, Jake, the Roto Edge exclusive fantasy football draft package is in fact live, and I wanted to chat it up with you a little bit about one of these articles. There's an article by Bobby McMahon out there around post-hype sleepers. Now, Jake, can you help me, first of all, can you help me define a post-hype sleeper, okay? Because we talked about the zero RB theory, the zero wideout theory, and a lot of people had kind of different ideas on where that level is, you know, of where you start to look. For me, a post-hype sleeper is someone where there was a ton of buzz around them, you know, and they ultimately maybe right out the gate didn't live up to those expectations, which then caused people to sleep on them. And the idea of the post-hype sleeper is like, listen, these are some guys who may still have a chance to realize their potential, and so you shouldn't sleep too much on them. Does that fit your description of what we're talking about?
I mean, pretty much. It's just okay. Yeah, people who were called a sleeper and hyped for it and didn't come through, basically.
All right. So in this article, Bobby McMahon, and we're not going to go too deep into it because, as you always say, Jake, you know, people want to, you know, you don't want to, what is it like? You sample the cow before you date the milk or something like that, whatever that saying is. We don't want to let them too far behind the curtain. But in this article, Jake, Bobby McMahon, he's got four wide receivers that I think are pretty interesting that he kind of categorizes as these post-hype sleepers. I'd like to find out from you which one you think have the most potential to really kind of take that step forward and realize their potential. One of them I know you love is Mike Williams, so we're going to take him out of it. The wide receivers are Devontae Parker in Miami, Zay Jones in Buffalo, and Dante Moncrief down there in Jacksonville. He says that all of these guys, you know, kind of, there's been times when there's been buzz in the fantasy community around him, a la, say, you know, the Christian Michaels of the world at the running back position, right? But out of Parker, Zay Jones, and Moncrief, who do you think maybe has a chance to take that step forward and realize their potential and kind of really be a post-hype sleeper, given, you know, their competition in the wide receiver room, the opportunity of that offense, and everything you consider?
Well, I mean, honestly, they all do. I mean, that's pretty much probably why he wrote about them. I mean, the
right.
fact is who's going to be the number two for the Bills? It's going to be Zay Jones, as long as the NFL doesn't get involved with what happened in the offseason and that whole situation. So if he's suspended
them,
I mean, so you have that type of situation, and we've been waiting for Devontae Parker for years. I'm kind of tired of it. I don't have any Devontae Parker because people are drafting him high again. Think it's going to happen, and there's certainly a case. Hell, he's got the talent to be the number one on that team. And then I've already been drafting Dante Moncrief for 2 months now. And we talked about that division,
yeah.
That the fact that already is who has the talent to be the number one on that team. He's the only person who has the all-around number one type of NFL player talent to be. So all three of them could be. I mean, like, there's definitely a case for all of them. But honestly, it's probably more likely two out of three of them hit this year instead of like only one.
Interesting. If you say two or three, are you going to say which one you think has the least chance to hit? If you're saying it's two out of three, are you going to tell us which one you think to stay away from of these? If you do think some of these are post-night
sleepers? No, I'm not staying away from any of them. But
okay, these are all viable for you.
Yeah, but probably the least chance if you wanted that, I probably go Zay Jones just because of the quarterback position and his team.
Right. So, because, you know, as you know, Jake, when we talk about these, one of the things we consider is the pie itself. right? So when you think about the pie itself, I would stay away from that Buffalo Bills pie a little bit
pie.
More.
It's the quality of the pie out there.
That's we can take this analogy very far, Jake, so fair enough. Let me ask you, for tight ends, two guys he mentions are guys that I think are further down these ranks. Jake, when we talk about tight ends, these are guys that we have not necessarily named before. The two tight ends in here, one is out of Atlanta. We talk about Austin Hooper. I remember because I had Austin Hooper in this kind of like he might pop range last year, the same way we talk about a guy like Burton or someone else, you know, this year. Like, he was my guy last year. And then, as you know, Jake, week one, he certainly delivered for me, right? So I was all over that, and I was happy. I'm talking about Austin Hooper, but he never really got above 50 yards. Outside of that week one when he had something, and I think that was all like a 70-yard catch and run in week one against Chicago or something like that to score a touchdown. The other tight end here that we're talking about is down there in Houston. Down there in Houston with Steven Anderson, who flashed for like 1 or 2 weeks. This, to me, is a little bit lower down the kind of board. When we talk about these wideouts, you mentioned how, yeah, Zay Jones, Moncrief Parker, a lot of people are talking about them. I think these two tight ends are a little bit lower down on the depth chart, shall we say, a little bit more of a chance, a flyer. What do you think? Austin Hooper vis-a-vis Steven Anderson, you think either one of these guys deserves to have you kind of hit the snooze button and wake up on them?
No, I have very little interest in either one of them, honestly, especially the Houston situation. I want really nothing to do with them.
Okay, so while you say when we're talking about Bobby McMahon's picks here on the wide receiver side, you buy into the idea that Parker and Zay Jones and Moncrief all still have some potential. But when we look at these these tight ends, Hooper and Steven Anderson, we think less so. Let's move over. There's some quarterbacks that fit this definition according to Bobby McMahon as well. And, you know, I think about some of the same guys. We talk about guys that are in their, like, fourth or fifth year that need to start to take a step forward. Obviously, we've discussed Jameis Winston a bunch, Jake, you know, as it comes to kind of his, actions recently. He's going to be suspended 3 games. In that draft class was also Marcus Mariota. We're talking about can he take a step forward? They're moving, you know, away from the exotic smash mouth. I know we expect Corey Davis's skill to be there. He has a weapon in Deion Lewis now out of the backfield as well. Dependable tight ends like a Delanie Walker. Do we think Marcus Mariota is primed to reward people who are not sleeping on him? Or the other quarterback that McMahon kind of diagrams in this article is actually down again in Miami, Ryan Tannehill. Says he's not expecting a huge breakout, but like, you know, if you need a capable QB2 that can get you 4,025, he thinks Ryan Tannehill would be able to do that. I would lean towards Mariota here over Ryan Tannehill, and I'm sure McMahon does as well. How big of a gap do you think that is? Do you have any belief in Ryan Tannehill?
Not a belief in him. I don't want anything to do with him in fantasy because even at 4,025 doesn't mean what it used to mean anymore. That's nothing in fantasy, especially if you're not running the ball. So Tannehill could in the past, but how much is it going to be like 200 yards? Marcus Mariota could run for 400-500 yards, 3 or 4 rushing touchdowns, and if they stop with the exact smash mouth and do pass more and you have the growth with LaFleur like we saw with the Rams, I mean, it could be a breakout season for him and the rest of this team. So I mean, don't give me Tannehill. I don't want nothing to do with Tannehill.
Okay, but you want a little to do with Mariota?
Yeah, I could draft Mariota.
You can get down with Mariota a little bit?
Second quarterback in a deep
little
league.
Mariota appetizer? Little QB2?
Okay,
You'll dip the chicken fingers in the Mariota sauce a little bit, but not the Tannehill sauce. I hear you. We like our analogies with the food, Jake. It's about the pies, you know, and how much you like them, that sort of thing. Hey, Jake, I know you're a wrestling guy, and we don't have a ton of time left here on Roto Experts in the Morning because our guy Carton and friends, they are back from 9 to noon, Monday through Friday. They're going to be holding it down, putting the fun in functional sports radio, as always, with Michelle and our guy, the fantasy executive. But I do know that you like a little bit of the combat sports, a little bit of the sports entertainment. I don't know if you saw any of this. UFC 226 went down, and, you know, Daniel Cormier was the light heavyweight champion. He stepped up, got a first-round knockout. knockout. But my interest, Jake, honestly, is what happened afterwards. It was straight like WWE style kind of like buildup and promotion. Out of nowhere, Daniel Cormier grabs the mic and calls out Brock Lesnar, the current WWE champion, who, if you follow it, and I know you do, is kind of in these kind of weird contract talks as sort of an absent champion in WWE. But there he was coming into the octagon, pushing the newly crowned heavyweight champion, talking some smack. What did you see this? What do you think about this? And is this like, I don't know, kind of WWE and UFC sort of merging in some way? We've seen this before, these kind of crossover things, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Are you expecting maybe later on in the year some kind of crossover event like this?
No, there's not going to be a crossover event. But the fact is, what?
No, I'm saying, so what do you expect? Do you think Brock Lesnar is going to literally be like a WWE employee and a UFC employee?
No, he's going to leave the WWE. That's the fact of what's going to happen. He's going to leave and go back to the UFC like he was always going to do. And the fact is, I don't even care about that side of it. I just care about how stupid this was in general, because this just took away from everything. UFC is supposed to be the realest thing on the,
right,
whatever that stupid catchphrase that they used to have for years and all that type of thing. This was stupid. This was scripted. This was like, for the whole fact, like, oh, Daniel Cormier just happened to know that Brock Lesnar was there, and Brock Lesnar just happened to sit at ringside, and Brock Lesnar just happened to be allowed in the ring.
And Dana White just happened to give him a mic.
And, yeah, they give him a mic, and Dana White standing there smiling with the biggest S-eating grin you've ever seen in your life. And the fact is, like, this is the stupidest thing ever. And honestly, if I'm Mia Chick, I'm kind of annoyed. Like, well, first of all, I'm annoyed because he got knocked out by Cormier, who I hate Cormier, by the way, because I just hate his personality. He's like fake tough, and it's just annoying. But anyway, you know, so it sets up that fight, and everybody's going to buy tickets, and I'll watch it, and everybody's going to watch it. But that whole thing at the end just took away from the entire night. This was supposed to be a super mega event, title versus title, the only like the fifth time this has ever happened. And then we do this whole WWE. It was basically WWE at the end, and that's what it was. It was stupid.
Right, the guy coming out to cut a promo on him, pretty much. And one question, though, Jake, doesn't...
And they're friends. He pushed him like he was like, oh, like, whatever, they're friends. Like, whatever.
Absolutely, this was like made for TV or pay-per-view, made for the promotion, trying to sell. I guess my question, though, is doesn't Brock Lesnar have a suspension hanging over his head when he goes back to the UFC? So couldn't it, like...
Doesn't he have to serve
6 months anyway?
No, it's already done. He just has to reapply.
Oh, okay. So he will be free and clear, ready to go. So listen, whether it's on, you know, the Arizona Cardinals win total, whether it's on the contrived fight that you think a Brock Lesnar, Daniel Cormier at UFC, whatever it is, maybe by that time 229 or whatever the case may be, you can go on over to mybookie.ag and use the prop builder tool. Or even if you wanted to pick Belgium over Brazil and you didn't want to make it straight up, you could have adjusted the line and make it a prop regardless. When you go on over to mybookie.ag, enter the promo code FANTASY, FNTSY, and you can get a 50% deposit bonus with your initial deposit. Use the promo code FNTSY, that is mybookie.ag. Remember, if you're getting the Roto Experts exclusive Edge fantasy baseball, fantasy football package, excuse me, you could enter the promo code ALLINKID, and you're going to get access to everything you need to win fantasy football this year, including the ranks of the number one ranker in the industry. That's my guy, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Hey, Jake, last thing before we get out of here, and it can dovetail into our Roto Clio if we so choose. All-Star Game nods came out. I was excited that my man Glaber got the nod after only about 60 games here as the exceptional rookie that he has been. I thought what was interesting, though, I don't know how Snell doesn't make this team. You know what I'm saying, Jake? I mean, Snell, 2.09 ERA, leads the American League. He's 12-4 on a Tampa Bay team that is not winning a lot of games. 132 strikeouts in 116 innings. Batting average against him is in the 180s. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that, you know, this is just the start of the roster, and a lot of people will miss because of injury, or Verlander will pitch that Sunday. And eventually, I'd be willing to bet my house that Blake Snell is actually on the All-Star team. But that kind of recognition, how does this guy get snubbed? How does the guy who leads the AL and ERA not make it onto the team, Jake?
By the rules. It just came down to the rules. And that's what you need. You need somebody from every single team, and you need a certain situation, and the final vote doesn't mix pitchers and hitters. So it just came down to the first five were Severino, Verlander, Cole, Sale, and Kluber. You're not
bumping
any
Snell
of those
over Cole, maybe?
No, not with the way that Cole started this season. The fact is, he also plays for the Astros, and then it came down to the five teams that didn't have voted in players were the Rangers, A's, Twins, Tigers, and Blue Jays. So they didn't even have somebody for their team. That's just what it came down to. It came down to the dumb rules.
Yeah, and then, you know, I also see it's interesting. We've been talking about the strength of the AL shortstops all season long. You got Simmons and Segura on that final fan ballot. You know, Correa didn't even make it. I know he's been on the DL recently, but just how stacked AL shortstop is. We'll talk more maybe about the All-Star game as we move into that next week. We will continue our NFC West previews moving on, and we'll continue to highlight all the information that you can get in the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package, getting you ready to win your leagues and win that cash. And we'll be doing it with the guy who has the best ranks in the industry. That's why you got to keep it locked, 7 to 9 a.m. every day here, Roto Experts in the morning. Hey, Jake, on Frenzy, on Target. Have a great rest of the day, my friend.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Have a great day, fantasy players. We'll see you tomorrow. Cardin and Friends up next.